We are going to be reviewing The Killers, the film noir from 1946, which was directed by Robert Sidomack, and it starred Burt Lancaster, Ava Gardner, and Edmund O'Brien. It was adapted from a story by Ernest Hemingway, and it was written by Anthony Viler, John Huston, and Richard Brooks. My guest today is Greg Woods, who is one of the people who run the Toronto Film Noir Syndicate here in Toronto, where I live. Greg, welcome. I'm so glad that you're able to join me today.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm curious, just before we get into the film, when did you initially get interested in film noir? And what was it about it that made you want to do kind of deep dives into all the movies of this period?
Well, I've been seriously interested in film since my teens, and it was still during that age too. When I really became interested in film noir, because I've always loved like hard boiled private eye stuff. Even though film noir has a greater reach than that too, but I just loved also like the style of it,
right,
and the tone of it as well too. Now also too cinematically, the world it creates. And its themes and everything like that.
Is there something in particular that you feel is definitely film noir? I mean, it's like this subgenre that some people define it as something very, very specific. It's always debated what's war and what's not. So I'm curious, what do you feel needs in order to be considered a noir from your perspective?
Noir, well, both thematically and visually, there's something distinct about it. For example, thematically, it's, you could say, amoral in a sense, is that people aren't clearly drawn in good or in strokes of good or bad. And for that matter, the themes are also very strong in terms of like dealing with like obsession,
right,
and also cynicism, by virtue of the fact is that quite often, you know, it'll look under the underbelly of what we consider to be like a civilized world, and show like the corruption and despair underneath,
right.
And well, visually too, it's definitely got its own look too, by virtue of the fact with like the hard key lighting, the shadows. And it's no coincidence that it's attained that look too, because a lot of key noir films of the 40s and 50s were done by German technicians,
right?
Schooled in the German Expressionist movement. And then when the Nazis rose to power in the 1930s, many, many technicians came to America and started their careers in Hollywood, and by virtue of the fact, you know, they had brought that same kind of style with them. And today's director, Robert Siodmak, and his brother, Kurt, they were both people who had fled Germany and started new careers in Hollywood.
Yeah, no, that's very well said. And it's I always find it fascinating when I'm talking to people about noir, how some people feel it has to have like either a femme fatale or a doom protagonist. And then some people have a broader opinion. So I always love those. It gives people a real perspective in terms of dissecting what is noir, what is not noir, and how subjective it is. So just, I know we chatted a little bit about the Toronto Film Noir Syndicate, but why did you and your colleagues decide to begin this?
What started the idea was that Shirley Hughes approached David Ferris and myself back in 2011 about doing this. And like, well, we're all great film buffs. We're not just noir. We love many genres, but specifically noir. It's a genre that we felt would always, you know, consistently draw a crowd, shall we say. There's always an audience for noir, and
now more than ever. It's interesting how now there's it seems like there's a lot more interest in noir, a lot more books coming out on it, a lot more recognition of films that perhaps didn't get much recognition at the time. So I can see how that would bring in an audience to screen it for sure.
Well, that's the thing too, is just, and by and large too, because films are now more available than they've ever been.
Right.
In a film fan's lifetime, by virtue of the fact of, well, DVD, Blu-ray, streaming, what have you, or TCM, of course, specialty channels like that. And so it is a very ripe time for discovery. And you're right. You know, it seems to me you could probably fill a whole bookshelf alone just with books on film noir.
it's pretty incredible. And you know, this film, The Killers, is one that I've always liked. I remember the first time I saw it, I mainly liked the Ernest Hemingway part that was like literally adapted from the short story. I thought the rest was okay. When I saw it again, I liked it more. And when I saw it this time again, I liked it even more. The reason I wanted to do it, because this is considered often to be one of the best noirs, and I have a bit of a hard time putting it there just from my own opinion. I'm curious, what do you think in general about this? Is this one of the best, or what do you think?
I think it's a terrific movie. The noir elements are there, as overt as say, if you want to talk about Siad Mack's film Phantom Lady, which is more visually expressive than The Killers, maybe.
Right.
We could debate that, I suppose.
Yeah.
But in the sense that the film's present plays more like a procedural than a noir.
Yes, yes.
Because all of the sin, if we shall say, has already happened. There's a murder in the first 20 minutes of the movie. And then Edmund O'Brien spends the rest of the film, you know, trying to not only solve the murder and of course retrieve this lost money that was indirectly related to Lancaster's murder in the beginning.
Right.
But thematically, again, any of the noir elements thematically have already happened before the opening credits, with the exception, of course, of the diner scene.
Right. You know, I love that scene.
Yeah. We can talk more about that, definitely.
Yeah.
For example, like all of the events are in some way related just because of Lancaster's obsession over Ava Gardner.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And which thereby causes the double cross after the Robbie and the double cross after that, without giving too much away in case anybody here hasn't seen the movie.
But, oh, don't worry. I'm all spoilers on my podcast.
Oh, okay.
I just figure we're doing a deep dive. So if you haven't seen it, click off. But I imagine most people watch because they've seen it and they love to talk about all of the
that's fair
the details of this film, because what's interesting about this movie is, and I'm not the biggest fan often of films that are heavy on plot, I prefer the more psychological films or exploring characters in general, but which noir certainly succeeded in many cases. This one, we certainly have some really great characters, but it's so plot driven. Not to criticize it, because it's a really clever plot. But you're right, because it has the sort of pure noir themes, in terms of we have our doomed protagonist who's totally motivated either by money and actually by sex. Because what's interesting is usually it's the femme fatale was only motivated by money, which in Ava Gardner's case, as Kitty, is largely true. But if you look at Burt Lancaster, when he can't box anymore, and I really love those boxing sequences because of his hands, his hand was so injured that, as they said, even if you punched a pillow, it would just break the bones.
Yeah,
it was something along those lines. And you know, as soon as his cop friends gives him some ideas of work, he brushes it off as basically not being good enough, because he would make, you know, $2,500 in a week sometimes, because he was like a you know, which I can understand. Nobody wants to make less, but in his case, he turns to crime, right? So he certainly was motivated both by money and his absolute obsession and falling head over heels for Kitty as Ava Gardner. And he only goes on this heist
because she's there.
Because she's there, right? Yeah. And he wants to be close with her, and he wants to be involved with her. But yeah, I mean, as far as everything that we've discussed, because I know that Robert, the director here, sits. I know he was particular with
Robert
how
C.
the
Odmack, yeah.
C. Odmack. I think I said Cinemac off the time, and I know someone will get mad at me about that. C. Odmack. I know he had done many noirs, as you mentioned, Phantom Lady, and of course he was from Germany. So you certainly can see that, and even sometimes. I don't know if you noticed this, but at times he was doing like an entire sequence in one take.
I was hoping we were going to talk about that. That robbery scene is marvelous.
That's incredible. And
from a God's eye point of view, where they go into the building, come out, get in the car, have a shootout.
Yeah.
Guy falls on the ground. The car takes off all in one shot. It's incredible.
You know, just to see Lancaster lying there and again, in mostly darkness and not wanting to save himself, not wanting to run and just saying I did something wrong. Again, the audience is just put in the position of, oh wait, the main character is dead. Well, how and why?
Yes.
You know? And so the whole story then goes that way. Is this a movie that you loved as soon as you saw it, or has your feelings changed at all with each viewing?
That's interesting. I first saw it on, if anybody in the Toronto, Western New York area remembers, Movie for a Sunday Afternoon on WKBW Channel 7. That's where I first saw it as a teenager.
Okay.
And I loved it then. And that's when I was really getting interested in film noir. But by the same token, when I looked at it again just a few nights ago, I was more thinking, it's not as noir as I remember. It's like more of a, procedural in a sense.
Yeah.
But you know, but even though people who love noir usually love that kind of noir stuff, that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
Like for instance, I remember
it's
when
a little like the Naked City's a little like that too.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah.
Same producer.
Even more so than this.
Yes. And because I remember when VCI Entertainment put out these DVD compilations called Forgotten Noir. A lot of them aren't really noir, but I don't think anybody really cared because, you know, people like that kind of stuff if they like noir anyway. So
Right. Yeah, it's like, just put it in the mix.
Yeah, exactly. But back to your question, you know, it's just like, even though looking at it again, I'm thinking, oh, it's not as noir-ish as I remembered. And probably because I'm spoiled by Phantom Lady. See, IMAX film we did 2 years prior.
I still have to see that. Yeah, I still.
It's even more visually expressive than The Killers is in that regard.
I just finished the book, Phantom Lady, Joan Harrison. Yeah, because I have the author coming on soon. And this is like another great treasure chest of film history that is not well known about Joan Harrison and all that she contributed to the genre and to Hitchcock. But I still have to
Uncle
see
Harry
that.
As well.
That's right.
Another important film in her career. Yes. Yeah. Also by the same director too.
That's right. Yeah.
He did a lot of them.
Do you think, go ahead. I was just going to say
that like Phantom Lady is more as far as that director's canon is concerned, it's more visually expressive that way and more noirish in the sense too, is that it's not as plot driven.
Right. It's more psychological.
On paper, it's like, that sounds kind of meh. But when you see it, it's more like just kind of a visual nightmare. And nightmares aren't supposed to make sense.
Right. Exactly.
It's supposed to be irrational.
Yeah. I got to see
Killers,
that.
On the other hand, it's more of like a conventional plot line in a sense.
Yeah. And it's certainly melodramatic. And I don't mean that as a criticism, but. Sure. You know, melodramatic in the sense, actually, I always wondered, how do you exactly define melodrama? And I recently read, it was sort of taking what is far-fetched and making it believable. And I thought that's a great way to put it. And this film certainly has aspects of it because the plot moves so quickly, but there are certain, not so much holes, but sort of things that you're like, how could he have figured that out or stuff like that? But before we get into that, there was something I wanted to ask in terms of, even though this film is highly plot driven, do you think that there's an essence to it? Is there a heart to it outside of the plot?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. It's just basically in one way or the other, people pay for the sins they've committed in various ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking that too.
Yeah. But what I find really interesting is also like Ava Gardner's character right till the end, how amoral she is.
Right.
At the end of the movie. And I don't want to give too much away here, when even in his dying breath, she's still trying to
make
herself look innocent in this whole plot.
Yeah. Well, that was certainly common with a lot of the characters, was that no one really had any feelings for anyone or any loyalty or any, I mean, everybody was out for themselves. Yes. Lancaster was, Ava Gardner certainly was, the bank, the robbers all were, even down to the scene after Lancaster loses that fight. And one of his boxing promoters was only disappointed in the fact that Lancaster's career was over because of the fact that he was going to lose money, going to lose 10 grand. Not that this poor guy's career is over. And I thought that was such a great moment that perhaps something that's less talked about in this film because it's so brief. But that was a common thing to me, and that's a common thing with noir, is that everybody's out for themselves and everybody wants something and will go all the way to get it, whether it's murder or certainly betrayal is something that, you know, comes up time and time again in this film. But they betray themselves. I mean, Lancaster certainly is self-destructive and knows that what he did was totally wrong. And I think ultimately that's why he lets those guys kill him. The classic Doom protagonist.
Yeah. One way or the other, he's got to pay for it sooner or later. Exactly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What did you think of the performances in this film? Because I recall seeing this in my early 20s, and foolishly, I never thought much of Lancaster or Gardner. I really don't know why, because I love Lancaster in so many movies. I think he was an exceptional actor. I still have to see more films with Ava Gardner. I haven't seen too many. But I certainly thought that the two of them, she had done a number of bit parts. This was like her, you know, star-making role. This is the first thing he ever did. And I'm curious how you felt about the acting with them, or Edmund O'Brien and anyone else.
You know, the parts I liked the best, is Sam Levine and Virginia Christie as the detective and his wife.
Yeah, that I love them too.
Yeah, and not to put down anybody else. Everybody's fine, but to me, I thought those characterizations were truly exceptional. And of course, the opening with Charles McGraw and William Conrad.
So good.
They are so humorless, and you know. And talking about thematically and things like that, these guys are so amoral. They're saying they're there to kill this guy.
Yeah.
They're calling each other by name. They don't care if they're identified. They're professionals. Right. What are you going to do? You know, they don't care.
Yeah.
You're here to do this job, and that's it.
That scene is so great. Just down to the ordering of the meals and them getting frustrated that the guy only has breakfast, you know, doesn't have anything dinner. It's such an iconic scene. But I really like the performances as well by Sam Levine and Virginia Christine, because, you know, Virginia was like the ex-girlfriend of Burt Lancaster.
That's right.
And you see that for her, that's just totally in the past. Everything about how she talked about it was that it was over, and that she was totally in love with the Sam Levine, who played Sam Libinski now. And yeah. I really like that because, you know, you see them in the past, she's at the fight. And then there's that other scene, which I thought was a really uncomfortable scene where they go to that party. And this is the first time that Lancaster sees Ava Gardner. Yes. And he's just gawking at her, like, really yes. inappropriately. Not, this isn't just a glance at a beautiful woman. He's like, he forgets where he is and just totally selfish. And it cuts back to her reactions of like, what are you doing? And she leaves. And to me, that was such a cringeworthy scene. I just yes. thought, but she played it so well. And she's also in the remake, the one that Don Siegel. Yeah.
She's the blind secretary in the opening of the Don Siegel's remake.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we'll have to do that one. We'll have to do that one some other time because I thought the remake was quite good as well. Mm-hmm. Different perspective, but it's
very much so.
Really, really good.
It'd be kind of funny to see, you know, if people continue to revisit that short story to see, okay, what perspective are they going to take this time?
Right.
Who's going to investigate the motivation for the killing this time? You know.
Yeah. Well, you. That's a good point because you really could. You could do that with everybody, like the dumb yes. dumb character, the guy, one of the robbers. Towards the end, you don't really know how he figured out where. Yeah. Ava Gardner and her husband were staying when he goes to find out about the money in that shootout. But you get an idea as to how. But you really could go into each character and take this entire story from their point of view, which is really clever that they did that with in the remake from the two killers, who in this film, of course, are only there in the beginning and at the very end. I really like that a lot. But the scene, the scene with Ava Gardner at the end that you had mentioned, where she was, you know, begging her dying husband to say I'm innocent. She performed that beautifully, and it's quite raw. Mm-hmm. And I had read that apparently she couldn't do it. Like, she didn't necessarily have the acting chops, or if maybe it was just a bad day, and the director had to, which was more common back then. Unfortunately, they would bully it out of you and threaten, you know, and just yeah. whatever they had to do to get it out of you. Yeah. And I think the director just basically threatened the performance out of her, but she was quite good.
Yeah, stories like that a lot. Yep.
Oh, for sure. Even to this day, you know, it's certainly then. But she certainly had the smoothness, the sexiness, the sultriness. Mm-hmm. I actually thought she was quite good. I don't know what you thought of her. Yeah. And Edmund O'Brien, I think, is a really underrated actor.
I agree with you. He's one of my favorite character actors.
He was fantastic. And that, like, so many movies.
We could just talk about his career in noir alone. Yeah. He's done so many great films in that.
Many.
DOA, many. The Hitchhiker.
Yeah. Yeah, White
7-Eleven
Ocean
yeah. Drive.
Yeah. Yeah. And really good at really natural.
He won an Oscar for the Barefoot Contessa, also with Ava Gardner.
Oh, he's in that. I didn't know he was in that. Yeah, that's one I'm going to be doing soon, actually, on the channel, because I've always wanted to see it. But yeah, he was an exceptional talent. I'm not quite sure why people don't look at him much on the level that they look at. You know, like Montgomery Clift or Brando, like the actors from the method, because he was also from that same school of acting. Which I don't think is very well known.
I will say, where O'Brien is concerned, though, I unfortunately have to admit that I think a lot of his work in the 60s and let's say the late 50s and through the 60s, he plays it very broadly.
Mm. I didn't know that. I haven't really even seen much past the 50s with him.
Okay. Like, he's the drunken news editor in Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Oh,
and
right.
he's
okay,
like
yeah.
Lost Sykes in The Wild Bunch.
Oh, yeah.
Also with him.
Yeah, I've seen those both.
Yeah. And his performances in that are very broad, shall we say. And so in some ways, I think a lot of his later work can kind of lend itself to that, you know, over the top, whereas...
Oh, I see.
His earlier roles, you know, are much more subtle,
mm-hmm.
but he's one of those guys, I think, you know, like, where guys like Cliff Robertson or Robert Culp and that, they can play anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's always, so a lot of his 40s and 50s work, it's always worth checking out.
Oh, for
and he
sure.
directed a couple of films too. There's a pretty good noir he did called Man Trap with Jeffrey Hunter and David Janssen. It's worth a look.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to check those out. But I agree. His stuff in the 40s and 50s with him were exceptional performances.
What I do, if I may say, what I do admire about the screenplay for the movie, though, is the flashback structure of it. Often, you know, I like movies that play with time anyway.
Yeah.
But the flashback structure can often be a lazy device.
Right.
In regards to, quite often you'll see that the narrative of like somebody who starts talking about something happens in the past, the screen dissolves, and of course we're seeing what they're reminiscing about. But quite often what happens is these flashback scenes start showing you things that the person telling you about this past incident couldn't have known, or scenes they weren't in.
Right.
And I always think that's very contrived.
Right.
But this movie's flashback structure doesn't do that.
No, it works really well. It
doesn't tell you anything more than what Sam Levine's character or whoever's character is telling you about what happened in the past.
Right.
It doesn't lend itself to any other extraneous narrative scenes just for the convenience of the viewer to understand what's going on or what's happening. It tells you strictly from what they saw.
Yeah.
The only difference maybe is the boxing scene that you meant, the fateful boxing scene with Lancaster.
Right.
And you see his girlfriend Lily in the audience. There's a cutaway to her, but that's based, which is kind of subjective, but that's about it really. Because everything is, otherwise we pretty much know everything strictly from the point of view of whoever the narrator is.
Yeah, that's well said. And I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that clearly, and it's true because if it's procedural, therefore they're finding information as the film goes on. So we only know what they know or anyone else knows at any time they're saying what happened or what they know about it. Then we see that flashback. I mean, that was down to the guy that Lancaster was in prison with, who was at the funeral later on, which is such a great scene with those stars.
What a scene that funeral scene is. It looks like something out of a horror film, just the hard lighting. You know, it looks like, well, it was a Universal film, so it could have been shot on some of the same locations as Frankenstein for all
possibly.
I know.
Possibly.
Got that look.
Yeah. what I like about it is that it sort of shows a little bit of the reality of being in jail, because here's a guy who was like in jail half his life, and certainly, you know, it's like the old saying goes, in prison you either read or get in trouble. And so this guy was one who read, right? Like he said, he knew everything about the stars and the planets and the sun. And I thought, because when you're spending that much time in prison, right, well, you're gonna, was one of the guys who read, I suppose, you know. But I like that. I like that aspect of that character.
That's a great part too for Vince Barnett, who is a bit player for years in Hollywood, and he often played like comedic wise guys and things like that. And that's a very, very good little tragic role for him. The scene where he and Lancaster are looking in the stars there in their jail cell.
Seen him. Maybe I just haven't read, but it looked like his makeup was a little obvious. I mean, it looked like they're making him up to be a bit older.
Yes, that's true. He's playing older in that scene.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, he was quite wonderful in it. But it's a highly enjoyable film. I mean, again, I wouldn't necessarily put it as one of the best noirs. So I'm curious what the audience thinks. Is this one of the best noirs? Please let us know in the comment box your opinion, because I'd love to hear it. Well, Greg, thanks again. I really appreciate that you took the time to come on and talk about this noir with me and share your insight. And it was a pleasure.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No, anytime. Yeah, come again. We'll have to do the remake sometime, because I love the remake as well.
I'd love to talk. Oh, well, speaking of the remake, there's something we might need to address, though.
Go ahead.
Is that in my research, I discovered that Don Siegel was originally slated to do this film.
I read that.
Which I think is rather surprising.
Yeah.
Now, how that would have played out for him in 1946 versus 64, I don't know, but yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, it's a little like Hitchcock doing The Man Who Knew Too Much twice, you know, a retelling of the same story, which is, you know, I can't even think of that many directors who did that, you know. So, and where can people find out more about the Toronto Film Syndicate, or even about anything else you're you promote or do it film that's film related?
Oh, well, thank you for asking that. The Toronto Film Noir Syndicate doesn't have a website currently, but we have a Facebook group. So if you just go to Facebook and do that search for Toronto Film Noir Syndicate, you'll find that very easily. 2 years in the making, I've been working on my website. For 11 years, I published a film zine, The Eclectic Screening Room.
Oh.
And finally, after 2 years, the site's finally going to be live, I hope, the first week of December.
Oh, great.
So screening-room.ca will be coming live to you very soon. I hope you guys can come and check things out there, and I hope you like what you see.
Awesome. No, I look forward to that, and I'll leave the links in the description box below. And yes, anyone in Toronto who wants to hold film screenings can get in touch with Greg Woods or anyone at the Toronto Film Syndicate. So fantastic. Well, thanks again. And just a goodbye to the audience. And just before I go, I just want to mention my Patreon membership. I have a film noir tier, and it's exclusive content, bonus content outside of the podcast. Just go to patreon.com/Robert Bellissimo at the movies, and I'll leave the link in the description box below. And there's also an audio version of the podcast. It doesn't have all of the episodes that are on the YouTube channel, but if you're heading out and you want to listen to a podcast, it's available on any of the platforms where audio podcasts are. And lastly, again, if this is your first time here, please consider subscribing. It's absolutely free to do so. My channel explores cinema from all over the world and how stories are told on film. So just press the Robert Bellissimo at the Movies logo. You'll see it floating above my head here to your top left. Just click on that and then click the bell in order to get a notification every time I release a new video or when I go live. Thanks so much, folks. I'll see you in the next episode.